This morning we're going to continue our study of the book of Daniel. We're up to Daniel chapter 10. I have to tell you, we're getting to the point in the book of Daniel that we're getting ready to get into some hard things. They're not, shouldn't say hard because they're, you know, they go against something we believe or they demand change in us, but it's a lot of information as we get back here to the end. Daniel, as he has the vision here in Daniel chapter 10, they believe he was about 90 years of age. He's been down there in Babylon for about 70 years, somewhere right around there. Think of all the things we've talked about that he's learned. God has told the king of Babylon when Daniel was just a young man there about the history of the world, how there'd be four world empires, and then eventually the fourth one would divide into 10, and then in the days of those 10 empires when they were still in existence, that the God of heaven would set up his kingdom. He passed that on to Daniel. Then he told Daniel, gave Daniel the vision of Daniel chapter 7, where he told him the history of that again, and then he began to tell him the history of the religious world also, how a power would come up amongst those 10 and would try to change God's 10 commandments. Then he told Daniel in chapter 8 of Daniel how long the change of the 10 commandments would last before God restored his downtrodden law. And then in chapter 9, of course, we studied last week about how he told him when the Messiah would come. Remember, all the way from the days of Adam, they looked for the Messiah, the Savior who would come. Everyone had always looked forward to that. And Daniel was finally given a time frame for when he would come. And yet it was still almost 500 years before the Messiah would come. In fact, when Daniel was told this, it was a little over 500 years, but still around 500 years till his coming. Daniel was told about how his people would get to return home to Jerusalem and rebuild their city and their temple, but God had to tell him that near the end of that 500 years, the 490, the Messiah would come, but Daniel's descendants would reject the Messiah. They would kill him, and in the end, their city and their temple would be destroyed again. When I think about that, I can see why. I used to wonder why it says Daniel, you know, kind of fainted and he had no strength as he had these visions. If you told us today that our grandchildren and great-great-great-great-grandchildren were going to have to go through worse than what we've gone through, it would be really hard to continue on, but Daniel's faith was strong and he continued on and did what was right. And as we come down to Daniel chapter 10, remember, Daniel was taken captive as a boy under the reign of Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon. And Daniel has watched as the first kingdom has passed away. God told him it would be replaced by the Medes and Persians. And the Medes and Persians have now conquered. And in Daniel 10, as we begin to read, it tells us, in the third year of Cyrus, king of Persia, a thing was revealed unto Daniel, whose name was called Belteshazzar. And the thing was true, but the time appointed was long. And he understood the thing and had understanding of the vision. So at this time we've reached the third year of Cyrus, king of Persia. He and Darius, the Median king, were the ones who overran Babylon and destroyed the first kingdom. And the time is coming that God is going to rebuild the temple in Jerusalem. And he's going to rebuild Jerusalem. Now, it seems like a pretty strange idea to us today. Can you imagine a king overcoming your city? And Nebuchadnezzar allowed the Jews to stay there at Jerusalem. And at first he didn't destroy the city of Jerusalem. He allowed them to live there and set up kings over them to take care of their people and everything, their own people. But they kept rebelling against him because they thought they could overthrow him. And finally he had to come back and destroy their city and get rid of it all, because he knew they would continue to rise up against him. So that's all happened, but God has said that he's going to restore that city of Jerusalem. Can you imagine this Babylonian king, or now we're down to the Persian king, 500 miles away across the desert over there, and he's going to get the idea in his mind to rebuild that city, the city that always rebelled against them and caused them a problem. He's going to decide to rebuild the city. But God had said that was what was going to happen. And God had had the prophet Isaiah speak some words long in advance to help with this situation when it came. We want to turn over to Isaiah chapter 44 and read what God had prophesied through the prophet Isaiah. God knew that the day would come when he would need King Cyrus, the Persian king, to give this commandment to restore Jerusalem. And this cost a lot of money. He was going to go back over there and rebuild these people's city who had caused them all this trouble. And he was going to rebuild the temple of a god that he didn't know, that he didn't believe in. But yet, that was God's plan. The Creator wanted this king to do this. So he had had the prophet Isaiah in Isaiah chapter 44, and we'll begin reading in verse 24. It says, "Thus saith the Lord thy Redeemer, and he that formed thee from the womb." There God reiterates that he is the Creator. "I am the Lord that maketh all things, that stretcheth forth the heavens alone, that spreadeth abroad the earth by myself." So God reiterates there that he is our Redeemer. He made us before we were born, and he's created the heavens and the earth. He stretched them out by himself. Verse 25, he says, "that frustrateth the tokens of the liars, and maketh diviners mad." These are the men who tried to tell the future, but they were unable to because God continually twisted up the future so that they couldn't understand it because their ways were falsehood. So as we continue in verse 25, he says, "that turneth wise men backward and maketh their knowledge foolish." In other words, God has said that he causes the wisdom of the worldly people to fail. It's not going to last for them. Now we're down to verse 26, Isaiah chapter 44 and verse 26. Isaiah 44:26, he says, "that confirmeth the word of his servant and performeth the counsel of his messenger." If God really sent people, he caused what they said to happen, And then look what he says at the middle of verse 26. He says, "that saith to Jerusalem, thou shalt be inhabited, and to the cities of Judah, ye shall be built, and I will raise up the decayed places thereof." God said those places would be rebuilt, even though they were going to be destroyed. Verse 27, he says, "that saith to the deep, be dry, and I will dry up the rivers." He reiterates the crossing of the Red Sea there, that he caused it to be dry, and he can dry up the rivers when he needs to. Now notice verse 28. King Cyrus has not yet been born when Isaiah wrote this of him. Isaiah 44 and verse 28, God says, "that saith to Cyrus, he is my shepherd, and shall perform all my pleasure, even saying to Jerusalem, thou shalt be built, and to the temple thy foundation shall be laid." The Jews did not use the name Cyrus. It was a foreign name to them. Isaiah was impressed to write it down on his scroll. God told him to write it down that eventually a man would come by the name of Cyrus, and he would say, "to Jerusalem thou shalt be built, and to God's temple thy foundation shall be laid." Now this was written far in advance, so someday when they showed it to Cyrus, Cyrus would know why he was here on planet Earth and what God gave him his life for. But God gave Cyrus a little more information. Before we read it, we want to talk about the city of Babylon. Cyrus came down to overthrow Babylon. It was probably the greatest city that was ever built as far as fortress power. It had 60 miles of wall. Historians aren't sure, but they say the walls were 200 feet high, maybe as high as 300 feet high, and they were 80 feet thick. They said they had chariot races there in the city, and they raced three chariots wide on top of the walls of the city around it. It was 15 miles on this side, 15 miles on that side, 15 miles and 15 miles. It was a perfect square, 60 miles of wall. And through the middle of the city flowed the river Euphrates. And so they always had water, and it ran right through the middle of the city. And on each side of the Euphrates River, they had built another wall, just like the exterior walls, 200 feet high, 60 feet wide, 80 feet wide, along that river, so that if anybody ever tried to get in the river and come up inside the city, they could just lock the gates on it, and they couldn't get in there. So this city really was a city that could not be conquered, as far as mankind's knowledge back then. They didn't have airplanes and bombs like we have today. They rode horses and chariots and had swords and spears, and this city was considered unconquerable. But God had said that it would be taken down, and for some reason Cyrus had the inspiration to divert the river. His army diverted the Euphrates River upriver from the city of Babylon. They dug a whole new river and they changed its channel. And as the river went down, the water went lower and lower. His armies came down to the city of Babylon and they marched underneath the wall of Babylon, the big wall, into the riverbed. And when he got inside the riverbed, they were having a big drunken party. It's recorded in the book of Daniel on one of their big pagan feast days. They were having a big drunken party, and they were all drunk, and nobody had closed the gates in the river. So Cyrus and Darius, their armies, marched right through the riverbed, and they walked into the city. There was not even a fight. And then their men just walked to the edge of town and opened the big main gates, and Cyrus's armies marched in. And, of course, they killed King Belteshazzar, it says, that night, and that was the end of the Babylonian kingdom. But look what God had said all this time before in chapter 45 and verse 1. It says, "Thus saith the Lord to his anointed, to Cyrus, whose right hand I have holden, to subdue nations before him. And I will loose the loins of kings, to open before him the two-leaved gates, and the gates shall not be shut." So when Cyrus, you know, I'm sure when he conquered the city of Babylon, he was in utter amazement that they were so foolish as to leave these gates open, and that he got right in there and got into their city. But years later, when he was shown these words that God had prophesied long before, that God made him from the womb, that God made the heavens, that God anointed him and he made him his shepherd to take care of his Jewish people while they were in exile, and God told him that he was to give the command that the city would be built and to the temple that the foundation would be laid, and then God revealed to him that he had anointed him and that God had held his hand and caused those gates to be open on that city. Cyrus then knew what his plan here on planet Earth was. He knew that God had put him here, and he knew also that God had delivered the city of Babylon into his hand, because if God had not caused those gates to be left open, Cyrus and Darius would have never taken the city of Babylon. So as Cyrus is sitting here and he's reading these things and pondering them, and he knows that God has given the commandment that he is to give the command to restore and build Jerusalem, let's turn back to Daniel chapter 10 now as we continue our study there. Having that bit of background and understanding where all of this comes from and where it's leading to, we turn back down to Daniel chapter 10. I want to refresh your memory. Last week we studied Daniel chapter 9, and we studied in verse 2 of Daniel 9, where Daniel said by reading the prophet Jeremiah, he understood that God was going to leave their city desolate for 70 years. So Daniel knew that the 70 years was over, and he knew that Darius, or Cyrus, was the name of the man who was supposed to rebuild their city. And now Daniel lives in the kingdom, and he's one of Cyrus's head men. And he knows that God has said 70 years the city's going to be destroyed, it's going to lay desolate. And at the end of 70 years, I'm going to bring a man along with a foreign name by the name of Cyrus. And Cyrus is going to give the commandment that you people can go home and rebuild your city. And he's going to pay for it. And he's going to let them rebuild my temple. And the king's going to pay for that also, even though he doesn't even believe in that God. Daniel knows all that, and Daniel is praying, and he's wondering how all this can happen. Can you imagine what a position Daniel was in at that time? What a day. Can you see all those things just converging at that time? And I don't know, but the Bible doesn't tell us, but I believe that Daniel's probably the one who showed the scroll to Cyrus and told him the story. I imagine that he's probably the one that did it, because he was one of the prime ministers. He was one of the head men of the kingdom, so he had access to this king. And the king's not going to be reading the writings of the Jews, so why would he be reading the prophet Isaiah? He doesn't believe in Isaiah. He doesn't believe in their God, because they were conquered. So he had to be shown these things. And as we get further into Daniel chapter 10, we're going to see that there was a war going on in the mind of King Cyrus. But we want to see what Daniel does to begin to try to do his part to bring this all together. Daniel chapter 10, and we'll begin reading in verse 1 again. It says, "In the third year of Cyrus, king of Persia, a thing was revealed unto Daniel, whose name was called Belteshazzar. And the thing was true, but the time appointed was long. And he, Daniel, understood the thing and had understanding of the vision." So Daniel tells us now about the last vision he ever had. He's beginning to tell us Daniel's chapter 10, 11, and 12 are going to cover the final inspiration that God gave to Daniel to write down for our day. Daniel says in verse 2, chapter 10 and verse 2, "In those days I, Daniel, was mourning 3 full weeks. Daniel was weeping and he was sad for 3 full weeks. Verse 3, "I ate no pleasant bread, neither came flesh nor wine in my mouth, neither did I anoint myself at all till 3 whole weeks were fulfilled." The Jews didn't anoint their head, they didn't wash their face when they were fasting. He ate no pleasant bread, it means he probably just ate bread and water. And he was fasting and praying that God would bring this all to pass and that he would give Daniel the understanding and let him understand. Verse 4 says, "In the 24th day of the first month, as I was by the side of the great river, which is Hiddekel," or some say the Euphrates or Tigris, some of them believe it's where the two come together there in Iraq today, where the kingdom was. Verse 5, "Then I lifted up my eyes and looked, and behold, a certain man clothed in linen, whose loins were girded with fine gold of Euphaz. His body also was like the beryl, and his face as the appearance of lightning, and his eyes as lamps of fire, and his arms and his feet like in color to polished brass, and the voice of his words like the voice of a multitude. And I, Daniel, alone saw the vision, for the men that were with me saw not the vision, but a great quaking fell upon them, so they fled to hide themselves. Therefore I was left alone and saw this great vision, and there remained no strength in me, for my comeliness was turned in me into corruption, and I retained no strength." Daniel says he had prayed and fasted for over 3 weeks, over 21 days. It's the 24th day of the month, so I would say he probably started that about the new moon, first of the month. And on this 24th day of the month, Daniel looked up and he saw a heavenly messenger, the brightness of heaven, and he described him there, light, eyes like lamps of fire, his skin looked like polished brass, had a golden girdle or clothing on. Daniel says he had some men with him that at that time, but they didn't see the vision, but they realized something awesome was taking place, and they fled in fear to get away from Daniel, as Daniel saw this vision. Verse 9, Daniel says, in verse 8 he said that he fainted basically, his comeliness or his goodness was turned into corruption, he retained no strength. And in verse 9 he says, "Yet heard I the voice of his words." So Daniel kind of fainted, but yet he heard what the man was saying to him, or the angel. "And when I heard the voice of his words, then was I in a deep sleep on my face, and my face towards the ground." Daniel bowed down, he fell down. "And behold, a hand touched me, which set me upon my knees and upon the palms of my hands." The angel reached down and took hold of Daniel and lifted him up a little bit. Verse 11, "And he said unto me, O Daniel, a man greatly beloved, understand the words that I speak unto thee, and stand upright, for unto thee am I now sent. And when he had spoken this word unto me, I stood trembling." He told Daniel, "Stand up, Daniel, you have nothing to fear. I've been sent to help you." And he told Daniel at the beginning of verse 11 that he was a man greatly beloved. Isn't that what we want to be heard? Wouldn't you like to have God tell you that you're a man or woman who's greatly beloved? And we are, and as we obey him more and more, we're even more beloved. Verse 12, he says, "Then he said unto me, Fear not, Daniel, for from the first day that thou didst set thine heart to understand and to chasten thyself before thy God, thy words were heard, and I am come for thy words." So he told Daniel, from the very first day that you began to pray, God's been hearing you, Daniel. Verse 13, look what the angel says. "But the prince of the kingdom of Persia withstood me 21 days. But lo, Michael, one of the chief princes, came to help me, and I remained there with the king of Persia." What verse 13, if we understand it in the Hebrew, if we looked it up and read each verse and broke them down, the words, like we've done in weeks past, I didn't choose to do this day, but if we break that down, the prince of the kingdom of Persia is talking about Satan's angel, who is there with the king of Persia, and he's trying to get Cyrus not to rebuild the temple, not to let the Jews go home, and this angel is there on God's side, and he's working on the king Cyrus also. And that's why it says, verse 13, "But the prince of the kingdom of Persia withstood me 21 days. Now, could a little puny man withstand this powerful angel for 21 days? Absolutely not. But one of Satan's angels was there trying to get the man to do something different. And this angel was there trying to get him to give that commandment to restore and rebuild. And it says, Michael, the chief prince, came to help him, and apparently that turned the tide, because in verse 14 Daniel says, "Now I am come to make thee understand what shall befall thy people in the latter days, for yet the vision is for many days." So he's come to tell Daniel that I'm now come, Michael's come to help with the situation with the king of Persia is under control, and now I've come to help you understand. And he prepares to tell Daniel this long prophecy that's getting ready to come. It's actually so long that we're going to have to break it up over 2 or 3 weeks, because this is the history of the world in a nutshell, you could say. It's amazing as we go through it and see the Greeks and the Romans, the different armies it describes in this chapter, the killing of the Messiah, which king would do it. It said clear back in Daniel's day, it was told that this man would be a raiser of taxes, the king that would kill the Messiah. All this prophesied in Daniel's day. Daniel continues on in verse 15. "And when he had spoken such words unto me, I set my face towards the ground, and I became dumb." Daniel fainted again, because he had told him in verse 14, "For the vision is for many days." He told him he was going to tell him what would happen at the time of the end in the latter days, but it was a long ways off. Daniel knew that he wasn't going to see it, and none of his children were going to see it. It was 2,300 years at least away before this was going to occur. Verse 16, Daniel says, "And behold, one like the similitude of the sons of men touched my lips. Then I opened my mouth and spake and said unto him that stood before me, O my Lord, by the vision my sorrows are turned upon me, and I have retained no strength." Daniel's saying, I'm so sad and weakened by this that I just can't hardly go. You know, depression works on everyone, and to be told that all this time must pass before the kingdom of heaven would come in, it would be almost too much for anyone. Verse 17, Daniel says, "For how can the servant of this my Lord talk with this my Lord? For as for me, straightway there remaineth no strength in me, neither is there breath left in me." Daniel said, "I don't even know how I can talk to you about this. I've seen the vision. I understand how long it's going to be. I'm just wiped out physically by thinking about it." Verse 18, it says, "There came again and touched me one like the appearance of a man, and he strengthened me, and said, O man greatly beloved, fear not, peace be unto thee. Be strong, yea, be strong. And when he had spoken unto me, I was strengthened and said, Let my Lord speak, for thou hast strengthened me." Now I've got a question for you. I want you to think about this for a minute. Why would God take the time to tell Daniel all this? Was this doing Daniel any good? Do you and I need to know what's going to happen 2,500 years in the future? Why did God do this? Well, he was a faithful prophet. Sure, that's why he used him. But I'm saying, why did God give him this information? It was for us. It was for the people that would live at the time of the end. Sure. He was a faithful man who would write down the vision. And for that, think about how much, and of course, this isn't, you know, questioning God's fairness or anything, because God made us all to use us in the way he needs to. But think of Daniel, the sadness that Daniel went through for you and I. He had to write this stuff down. He had to understand it. So therefore, he had to see to the end. He was an old man, 90 years old. He would probably just like to have gone to sleep in peace and thought the Messiah was coming in a couple years, maybe. And instead, he had to write all these things down. God used him for this. It was for your and my benefit. So, you know, if we disregard what Daniel said to us today, he's going to stand for a witness against us at the end. Because the Bible tells us that Daniel's going to stand in his lot at the end of the days. And Jesus has told us that we have to study what the prophet Daniel says. Sometimes we study these things and it seems old and dry and we wonder why it's there and what it's for, but we have to understand these things because the Bible tells us if we don't understand these things, we will not be able to understand how the world's going to end and we'll be on the wrong side at the end. So these have been given to us for guideposts. And Jesus told us in Matthew 24:15 that we had to study the prophet Daniel because we've got to understand the abomination of desolation when it comes. So Daniel continues on, Daniel chapter 10. Let's read verse 19 again. The angel said to him, O man, greatly beloved, fear not. Peace be unto thee. Be strong, yea, be strong. And when he had spoken unto me, I was strengthened. The angel gave Daniel strength. And Daniel said, Let my Lord speak, for thou hast strengthened me. Then said he, Knowest thou wherefore I come unto thee? He says, Now you know where I came from, the prince of Persia, fighting with him, with the king of Persia. And now will I return to fight with the prince of Persia. He was going back to continue restraining Satan's angel who was there trying to work on the king of Persia. And he says, And when I am gone forth, lo, the prince of Grecia shall come. Now we know that the next empire to conquer the Persians was the Greeks. So this angel was telling Daniel, When I'm finished helping the king of Persia, when his time is to be no more, the prince of Grecia shall come. In other words, the next kingdom will come. But in verse 21, Daniel is told by the angel, But I will show thee that which is noted in the scripture of truth. And there is none that holdeth with me in these things but Michael, your prince. He told him, I'm going to show you what is noted in the scripture of truth. And there's none that holdeth with me, or there's none, he's saying, that understands with me these things but Michael, your prince. He told him Michael there was Daniel's prince. We're not going to really get into that today. That's another study for another day. But now as we begin Daniel chapter 11, we're only going to read a few verses of this today. We're just going to kind of tie this together because we needed to go through chapter 10 and see the background on all this. And we're going to read just a little bit into chapter 11. Chapter 11, verse 1, the angel continues to speak to Daniel and he says, Also I, in the first year of Darius the Mede, even I stood to confirm and strengthen him. So this angel tells him, Darius was the uncle of Cyrus, and he tells him that he helped Darius also when Darius became the first king when they conquered the Babylonians. He said that he was the one who stood to confirm and strengthen Darius. Now we begin to go into this last vision that Daniel saw. Verse 2 says, And now I will show thee the truth. Behold, there shall stand up yet three kings in Persia, and the fourth shall be far richer than they all. And by his strength, through his riches, he shall stir up all against the realm of Grecia. The Greeks were already becoming a strong power, And the angel told Daniel that there would be three more kings come of the Persia after Darius. And that was Darius' son, Cambyses. There was a man who they called an impostor to the throne who tried to seize it. He came after him, and then there was one more. And then there was Xerxes, the fourth king, and he was far richer than they all. I could have read to you this morning out of a history book. Herodotus was a historian who lived in that day, and he's considered an accurate historian. And he says that Xerxes, the fourth king, was vastly rich, richer than anybody else. And Xerxes raised up a great army, which he says numbered over 5 million men to go up against the Greeks. Can you imagine a 5 million man army back then with horses and swords and spears? 5 million people gathered on one plain to go against the Greeks. And it says that he shall stir up all against the realm of Grecia. They say they even hired foreign soldiers to come with him, about another 300,000 more, and that was about 5.5 million when they went up against the Greeks. Now in verse 3 it says, "And a mighty king shall stand up, that shall rule with great dominion and do according to his will. And when he shall stand up, his kingdom shall be broken, and shall be divided toward the four winds of heaven, and not to his posterity, nor according to his dominion which he ruled, for his kingdom shall be plucked up even for others beside those." So he told him, Daniel, there's going to be three more kings in this Persian kingdom in which you live today, and the fourth one, after the three, will be far richer than they all, and he's going to raise this mighty army and go after the Greeks. And as we see history, that exactly happened. And then they told him in verse 3 that a mighty king would stand up amongst the Greeks. And we know that this is referring to Alexander the Great. And we want to make sure we're understanding this. If you've been reading your book of Daniel a lot, some of these words should sound familiar to you. We want to turn back now to Daniel chapter 8 and read this same man is talked about in this chapter and see how he's talked about. Daniel chapter 8, it begins in verse 5. You remember in Daniel chapter 8, it began with the Medes and Persians kingdom, and then by the time you get down to verse 5 of Daniel chapter 8, it begins to talk about Alexander the Great. And Daniel 8:5 says, "And as I was considering, behold, an he-goat came from the west on the face of the whole earth, and touched not the ground, and the goat had a notable horn between his eyes. And he came to the ram that had two horns, which I had seen standing before the river, and ran unto him in the fury of his power. And I saw him come close unto the ram, and he was moved with choler against him, and smote the ram, and brake his two horns, and there was no power in the ram to stand before him, but he cast him down to the ground, and stamped upon him, and there was none that could deliver the ram out of his hand. Therefore the he-goat waxed very great, and when he was strong, the great horn was broken, and for it came up four notable ones towards the four winds of heaven." Now those last words I read there, it says, the great horn was broken, and for it came up four notable ones towards the four winds of heaven. And we've already studied about how when Alexander died, his empire was divided between his four generals. It was divided that way. Of course, in verse 20 of chapter 8, the angel told Daniel specifically who this represented. In verse 20 of chapter 8, it says, "The ram which thou sawest having two horns are the kings of Media and Persia." Now, Daniel is living, when chapter 10, what we're studying, he's living in the days of the king of Persia. That's the Persian king Cyrus. So he's covered here in verse 20. And verse 21 says, "The rough goat is the king of Grecia, and the great horn that is between his eyes is the first king. Now that being broken, whereas four stood up for it, four kingdoms shall stand up out of the nation, but not in his power." So Daniel already had this information back in chapter 8. Now let's turn back over to chapter 11, and we'll read it again. We read verse 2 already. Then the angel said, "I will show thee the truth. Behold, there shall stand up yet three kings in Persia. The fourth should be far richer than they all, and by his strength, through his riches, he shall stir up all against the realm of Grecia. And a mighty king shall stand up, this is Alexander the Great, that shall rule with great dominion and do according to his will. And when he shall stand up, his kingdom shall be broken. Remember, we just read in chapter 8, it says his great horn would be broken as soon as he got his great power. Here it says his kingdom shall be broken and shall be divided toward the four winds of heaven. Remember, we just read that back in chapter 8. It would be divided towards the four winds of heaven. Now, here it gives us a little bit more information, though. It says in verse 4, and not to his posterity. Did any of Alexander's children inherit his kingdom? They didn't. His four generals took the kingdom. They were no relatives of his at all. Daniel told them that it would not be any of his posterity. It says, nor according to his dominion which he ruled. Remember, we talked about how none of these men ruled his whole kingdom. They divided it in four. It was four lesser kingdoms, so they never had the dominion that Alexander had. It says, for his kingdom shall be plucked up, even for others besides those. So God told Daniel here, he reiterated what he had told him in chapter 8 about how this king was going to come. Now that's all we're actually going to study of Daniel chapter 11 for this week. We're going to take off again next week on this and finish going through Daniel chapter 11. I will point you out to one thing down in verse 22 of chapter 11. I encourage you this week to study Daniel chapter 11. If you have the book Daniel and the Revelation, read the words that are written there about this chapter, because it is a correct interpretation of it. It'll help you understand it better. This chapter continues on in 11, and it takes us down through the Roman kings. And when we get down to verse 20 of Daniel 11, it says, then shall stand up in his estate a raiser of taxes in the glory of the kingdom. This is talking about the Romans, and you remember why Jesus was born where he was supposed to be born, because a raiser of taxes stood up. The Roman emperor gave the decree that everybody had to go back to their hometown to be taxed. So Mary had to travel back to Bethlehem, and Jesus was born there. This prophecy in Daniel's day covered with that much detail the history of the world. He told them that a raiser of taxes would stand up, but within a few days or years he shall be destroyed, neither in anger nor in battle. That Roman Caesar died in his sleep. And in his estate shall stand up a vile person, to whom shall they not give the honor of the kingdom. But he shall come in peaceably and obtain the kingdom by flatteries. And with the arms of a flood shall they be overthrown from before him, and shall be broken, yea, also the prince of the covenant. It's talking about Jesus, the Messiah there, being cut off by this Roman power. Next week we're going to get in this. It gets very interesting as you study about the history of the Jews here, and we're going to see some very explicit times mentioned here. The 360 years that the Roman power would rule from the city of Rome. We're going to see how they changed God's times and his laws, and it takes us down to the very time of the end. Even the coming of Satan and the Antichrist are prophesied here in Daniel chapter 11. So I encourage you to study it this week, think about it, and then next week we're going to finish Daniel chapter 11. It's quite a bit to go through in one week, but we've got the background laid for it, and we're going to go through the whole chapter and try to get a good understanding of it. God bless you, and have a good week. Our closing song today is hymn number 75. Thank you. Bow our heads for prayer. Our Father in heaven, hallowed be thy great name. We thank you for the beautiful Sabbath day. We thank you for your many blessings to us, Father. We thank you for these great words that you've caused your prophets to write down for our day, Father. We ask that you open our minds and expand our understanding and allow us to understand these things, for they are difficult. Bless us and help us to have a greater and greater knowledge of you and more respect and love for you as we see the way you've told us what will happen in the future and the blessings you've poured upon us. Bless us and help us all to hear these words and be ready to stand before you when you come as workmen that need not be ashamed. In Jesus' holy name we ask these things. Thy will be done, Almighty Father. Amen.